Well, now we move on to the Shroud of Turin. When Christ was taken down from the cross, his body was placed in a linen sheet and laid in the tomb. And the Shroud of Turin is believed to be that sheet of linen. There are marks on the linen which are bloodstains. There are other strange markings which are quite different, and they form a ghostly sketch of a man's body, front and back. If the Shroud of Turin is authentic, then it has been part of Christianity since Christianity began. But until recent years, I suppose not one Christian in hundreds of thousands would have known that it even existed, and not one in millions would have known what it looked like. But modern science and the mass media have unlocked the great secret of the Shroud, as we shall see, and have given the Shroud in its fullness to our 20th century. I believe that the ancient Shroud was designed by God principally for our century of crisis. The Bible records that on the first Easter morning, Peter and John were urgently called to Christ's empty tomb. But they looked inside and they saw the body was gone. And they saw that the linen cloth was folded and was lying in a different place from the smaller grave cloths. We learn that from the arrangement of the grave cloths, Peter and John saw and believed that the Master had risen. They didn't go off to the governor and lodge a complaint that Christ's body had been stolen from the tomb. No, they went quietly home. They were stunned because they were grasping the most momentous fact of history, the fact that Christ had risen from the dead. Today in Turin, there is an ancient piece of linen 14 feet long, and it's the church's most treasured relic. It's believed to bear the image of Jesus Christ in death. And as this diagram shows, it's a documentation of his five major wounds and a record of his other sufferings. It records the details of his passion and it confirms the Bible. There isn't time to go into the history of the Shroud. In fact, for its first 1,000 years, there is no historical documentation of it, only brief mentions by pilgrims and other writers. The first clear documentation of it is in the year 1171. The Shroud was then in Constantinople and was in the keeping of an empress. A few years later, it was venerated at the Church of Our Lady of Blanchernes. Around 1350, we know that it was in France. After 1380, its history becomes clearer. It had to be moved around France during the 30 Years' War with England, and was then in the keeping of powerful noblemen. Then it was moved to Belgium, then back to France, where it was given into the possession of the Duke of Savoy. And the family of Savoy have kept it in a silver casket in a chapel at Chambéry. And this is the Shroud of Turin, with its sketchy image of a man, front and back. This is the Shroud, after all those adventures, and after a further mishap, which was nearly a catastrophe. In 1532, a fire broke out in the chapel. The heat melted one side of the casket, and a drop of molten silver fell on one corner of the folded shroud, and it burned through it. When the shroud was opened out, it had 12 holes in it, in two rows along its length. But fortunately, the image of the shroud had been scarcely touched by the burn marks. In 1578, the Shroud was taken to Turin in Italy, and it stayed there ever since. If you're ever fortunate enough to look at the Shroud itself, you might be a little disappointed. You'd see sketchy markings indicating rather vaguely the shape of a body front and back. Also, you'd see certain blood marks which correspond to the five great wounds of the crucified Christ. Very definite blood marks on hands and feet, and on the right side. And there are other blood marks which indicate that the man had been flogged. As regards the face, you'd see sketchy markings, a phantom face. There are smaller blood marks around the forehead and around the back of the head, which correspond to wounds which a crown of thorns would make. Well, for centuries, Christians venerated this linen, with the blood marks and the faint image. They venerated it as the very cloth which had wrapped Christ's body in the tomb, and on which cloth Christ's body had left a record of his crucifixion. Then, not long ago, photography was invented, and with photography, something wonderful happened. In 1898, an Italian lawyer, Signor Pia, who was also a photographer, was allowed to photograph the shroud on one of its rare exhibitions. When Signor Pia and his two assistants developed the plate, they expected to see a negative of the shroud image, and they did, but what a negative it was. On their camera negative, the shroud image had come to life. The camera negative is the image on the right, the actual shroud image is the one on the left. The negative that Signor Pia held in his hand showed a real picture, a positive picture, a true picture of the face and the body. The camera negative was really a positive picture, which meant that the image on the linen shroud is really a photographic negative. Tremendous thought. The shroud had been preserved for 19 centuries, bearing a perfect photographic negative imprint, without anyone knowing this technical point. And of course, nobody could possibly have known it until the invention of photography. It seems that God meant it that way, that God meant the shroud to be held privately in trust for the 20th century, when its extraordinary secret would be revealed by science. And then, through science, the shroud would no longer be hidden and private. Its completeness would be handed to our generation, our skeptical, post-Christian generation that needs it. The world proclaims that religion must bow before science. Well, God must have a sense of humor. He lets modern science itself be the instrument for showing us that there is something beyond to which modern science must humbly bend its knee. Imagine that momentous moment in the photographic darkroom. Signor Pia and his assistants peering at the wet plate, at the negative which was really a positive. Signor Pia said that his hand shook with excitement, so that the wet film was in danger of being damaged, as he realized that he and his assistants were the only men alive who knew just what Jesus Christ looked like. Signor Pia nearly fainted, and that's a fact. Well, this slide shows half of what Signor Pia saw on his wet plate. His plate showed the whole length of the shroud, with a positive photo of a man's body, front and back. This slide is only the front of the body. Since then, the shroud photograph has been the subject of intense scientific scrutiny, and subject to attacks by persons who wanted to discredit it. Now, a closer view of the front half of the shroud. Since the time when Signor Pia made his photograph, other photos have been taken with better cameras. Enlargements have been made, and the enlargements examined by microscope. Every reasonable scientific examination has been made, and each examination, each test, has made the evidence stronger that this is indeed the death image of Christ. Now, here's an important point. On the shroud, there's a sort of dual photography. There are two kinds of recordings. Firstly, the blood marks are made by direct contact with the linen. The blood is real. It's dried blood. It's a dark reddish tinge, and being dark, it shows up white on the photoplate. Secondly, the rest of the image was not made by contact. It's by some mysterious process which hasn't been satisfactorily explained. Now, oddly enough, in this morning's newspaper, there's a feature article on the Shroud of Turin. It's a good article, but I must clear up one point. The article states that it's been scientifically proved that ammoniac vapor from the body would have stained the shroud, making an imprint like that on a photographic plate. Well, now, this may comfort people who can't accept anything miraculous. But with respect to the newspaper, I think its article is wrong on this point. What it's quoting is the vaporographic theory, suggested by Paul Vignon, Doctor of Science, in his 1902 book. His theory was strongly opposed by other scientists at the time, and as time passed, Paul Vignon himself largely lost faith in his own theory. I think I can say that the better opinion is that the vaporographic theory has fallen more and more into disfavor, and that there is not at present any scientific explanation for the negative imprint on the shroud. Some will say forgery by a medieval artist, but no medieval artist could have painted a perfect photographic negative, and one on which was combined a perfect knowledge of anatomy with an anticipatory knowledge of circulation of the blood, centuries before Harvey discovered circulation of the blood. And if that's not enough to rule out a faker painter, how about this? No paint has been used on the shroud. Under the microscope, every thread of linen is visible, whereas paint would have covered and hidden the threads.
Then, consider this wonder of wonders, which was recently discovered. The shroud has a three-dimensional content. Scientists, using the most sophisticated equipment for analyzing space pictures sent from the planet Mars, found that the shroud has certain coded information which can be fed into a computer to produce a three-dimensional image of the body depicted on the shroud. Even those tough scientists were mesmerized by this three-dimensional quality, because this three-dimensional quality is outside the possibility of any known process of photography or painting.
Now, what does the shroud tell us? It shows that Jesus was 2 or 3 inches under 6 feet tall and was of a well-proportioned physique. And among the not-so-tall Jews, he'd have been a commanding figure. The entire body is covered with scourge marks, and the marks show that the scourging was done with an instrument called the flagrum, which the Romans used. The flagrum had a short handle and it carried 2 thongs. At the end of each thong was a piece of metal or bone shaped like a dumbbell. If we look at the image of the back of the body, we can see that the dumbbell bruises cover the body and the legs. And from the way the marks lie on the body, it's been deduced that Christ stood upright with hands tied above his head during that terrible flogging, and that he was flogged front and back. On the shroud, the left leg looks shorter than the right leg. This means that the right foot was against the wood of the cross. Then the left foot was placed on top of the right instep, and a single nail was driven through both feet. So the left leg was bent at the knee, and after death, when rigor mortis set in, the left leg remained firmly bent. And this gives it the appearance of being shorter than the right leg. The hands. A large blood stain is seen at the back of the left hand, and blood has flowed along the forearms as they were outstretched on the cross. The position of the large blood stain is on the wrist, not on the hand, and this confirms that Christ was nailed through the wrists, not through the hands. If nailed through the hands, the weight of the body would tear the hands away from the nails. But in the wrist, there's a spot where a nail can be driven through a sort of hole in the bones, and this would give support for the weight of the body. And unfortunately for the victim, the nail would damage the median nerve in the wrist and would cause almost unbearable pain. Well, the shroud shows that Jesus was nailed through the wrists. The wound in the side. You can see this as a white blood mark on the right side. It's been estimated to be between the 5th and the 6th ribs, and that is the very spot a professional soldier would have aimed at to drive a spear slightly upwards and into the heart without hitting any bone. Now remember, the victim would be slightly higher than the soldier. The spear would pass through the lung and the pericardium, and then into the right auricle of the heart. And from the pericardium would come watery fluid, and from the right auricle would come blood. The shroud again confirms the Bible. There flowed out blood and water. But note something. This would not happen if the spear had gone through the other side, through the left side. because it would then have penetrated the left ventricle of the heart, and the left ventricle at death is empty of blood. So we note that the shroud shows the wound on the correct side and in the correct place to confirm the Bible on this delicate point. The face. On good photos, it's a strong, resolute face, Jewish type and of noble proportions. Both cheeks seem swollen from blows. The right eyelid is damaged, and it looks as if his face has been struck by a stick which had bruised his nose but not broken it. Droplets of blood over the crown of the head indicate that the thorns had formed a cap, completely covering the head. And the shroud reveals other things which I haven't time to discuss. And from the shroud, experts have reconstructed in painful detail the entire passion of Jesus. When Christ's body was taken down from the cross, the Sabbath had nearly begun. No Jew would perform work on the Sabbath. Therefore, the body had to be hurriedly laid in the tomb. There was none of the usual washing, none of the usual full anointing and binding with swathes of linen. All this was postponed. It would be all attended to after the Sabbath was over. And this was fortunate. If the body had been washed and bound in linen and buried in the usual manner, there would have been no death image of Christ on the linen shroud. Again, I suggest that God arranged the unusual circumstances in his own wise providence. True science does not contradict religion. True science walks with religion. In a strange way, the shroud actually confirms the supernaturalness of the resurrection. Experiments have proved that if a wounded limb is placed in contact with linen, it's impossible to remove the limb from the linen without smudging the blood mark on the linen. So when Christ's blood-stained body lay in the linen shroud, his body could not have left the shroud by any known natural means without smudging and spoiling the picture of the wound marks. This is important to know in these days when many experts are spreading doubt on the bodily resurrection of Christ. Rather, we should heed the honest words of an old man, an infidel. He wasn't even a Christian believer, but he was an expert on anatomy. When Dr. Barbet gave this infidel anatomist his book on the wounds of Christ, the old scientist read the book and then he exclaimed, "Then, mon vieux, Jesus Christ rose again from the dead." Well, I hope the old man was rewarded by God for his honest acceptance of truth based on purely scientific reasoning. As far as we know, or as far as I know, the shroud has been exposed only 8 times in the last 200 years. For 19 centuries, it would have been virtually unknown to Christians. But in the last 40 years, thanks to science and the mass media, the shroud is becoming known and revered throughout the world. An ancient miracle, post-dated for our 20th century, for these days when the Gospels are downgraded and even the resurrection is disputed. For centuries, Christians believed in these things by faith, and now the shroud has burst on the world, bringing hard, scientific, material proof of these truths which we so long accepted on pure faith.